Emrin said she was close to finding what we needed in the book, too. Whatever spell my sister would wield. How Emrin knew, I had no idea. It didn't seem wise to ask. Nesta only spoke when I rose to my feet. You're going to that meeting in 2 days. Yes. I braced myself for whatever she intended to say. Nesta glanced toward the front windows, as if still waiting, still watching. You went off into battle, without a second thought. Why? Because I had to. Because people needed help. Her blue-gray eyes were near silver in the trickle of morning light. But Nesta said nothing else, and after waiting for another moment, I left, winnowing up to the house for my flying lesson with Azriel. Chapter 41. The next 2 days were so busy that the lesson with Azriel was the only time I trained with him. The spymaster had returned from dispatching the messages Moore had written about the meeting moving up. They'd agreed on the date, at least. But Moore's declaration of the spot, despite her unyielding language, had been universally rejected. Thus continued the endless back and forth between courts. Under the Mountain had once been their neutral meeting place. Even if it hadn't been sealed, no one was inclined to meet there now. So the debate raged about who would host the gathering of all the High Lords. Well, six of them. Baron, at last, had deigned to join, but no word had come from the Spring Court, though we knew the messages had been received. All of us would go, save Amarin and Nesta, who the former insisted needed to practice more. Especially when Amarin had found a passage in the book last night that might be what we needed to fix the wall. With only hours to spare the evening before, it was finally agreed that the meeting place would take place in the Dawn Court. It was close enough to the middle of the land, and since Calias, High Lord of Winter, would not allow anyone into his territory after the horrors Amarantha had wrought upon its people, it was the only other area flanking that neutral middle land. Rhys and Thesen, High Lord of the Dawn Court, were on decent terms. Dawn was mostly neutral in any conflict, but as one of the three solar courts, their allegiance always leaned toward each other. Not as strong an ally as Helion Spellcleaver in the Day Court, but strong enough. It didn't stop Rhys, Moore, and Azriel from gathering around the dining table at the townhouse the night before to go over every kernel of information they'd learned about Thesen's palace, about possible pitfalls and traps, and escape routes. It was an effort not to pace, not to ask if perhaps the risks outweighed the benefits. So much had gone wrong in Highburn. So much was going wrong throughout the world. Every time Azriel spoke, I heard his roar of pain as that bolt went through his chest. Every time Moore countered an argument, I saw her pale face and backing away from the king. Every time Rhys asked for my opinion, I saw him kneeling in his friend's blood, begging the king not to sever our bond. Nesta and Amarin paused their practicing in the sitting room every so often so that the latter could chime in with some bit of advice or warning regarding the meeting, or so that Amarin could snap at Nesta to concentrate, to push harder, while she herself combed through the book. A few more days, Amarin declared when Nesta at last went upstairs complaining of a headache. A few more days, and my sister, through whatever mysterious power, might be able to do something. That is, Amarin added, if she could crack that promising section of the book in time. And with that, the dark-haired female bid us good night, to go read until her eyes were bleeding, she claimed. Considering how awful the book was, I wasn't entirely sure if she was joking. The others weren't either. I barely touched my dinner, and I barely slept that night, twisting in the sheets until Rhys woke and patiently listened to me murmur my fears until they were nothing but shadows. Dawn broke, and as I dressed, the morning unfurled into a sunny, dry day. Though we would be going to the meeting as we truly were, our usual attire remained the same. Reese in his preferred black jacket and pants, Azriel and Cassian in their Illyrian armor, all seven siphons polished and gleaming. Moore had foregone her usual red gown for one of midnight blue. It was cut with the same revealing panels and flowing gauzy skirts, but there was something restrained in it. Regal, a princess of the realm. The usual attire, except my own. I hadn't found a new gown, for there was no other gown that could top the one I now wore as I stood in the foyer while the clock on the sitting room mantel struck 11. Reese hadn't yet come downstairs, and there was no sign of Amryn or Nesta to see us off. We'd gathered a few minutes earlier, but I looked down at myself again. Even in the warm phalite of the foyer, the gown glittered and gleamed like a fresh-cut jewel. We'd taken my gown from Starfall and refashioned it, adding sheer silk panels to the back shoulders, the glittering material like woven starlight as it flowed behind me in lieu of a veil or cape. Every sand was night triumphant. I was the star that only glowed thanks to his darkness, the light only visible because of him. I scowled up the stairs. That is, if he bothered to show up on time. My hair, Nuala had swept into an ornate, elegant arc across my head, and in front of it, I caught Cassian glancing at me for the third time in less than a minute, and demanded, "What?" His lips twitched at the corners.
"You just look so..."
"Here we go," Moore muttered from where she picked at her red-tinted nails against the stair banister. Rings glinted at every knuckle, on every finger. Stacks of bracelets tinkled against each other on either wrist.
"Official,"
Cassian said with an incredulous look in her direction. He waved a siphon-topped hand to me.
"Fancy."
"Over 500 years old," Moore said, shaking her head sadly. "A skilled warrior and general, famous throughout territories, and complimenting ladies is still something he finds next to impossible. Remind me why we bring you on diplomatic meetings?" Azriel, wreathed in shadows by the front door, chuckled quietly. Cassian shot him a glare.
"I don't see you spouting poetry, brother."
Azriel crossed his arms, still smiling faintly.
"I don't need to resort to it."
Moore let out a crow of laughter, and I snorted, earning a jab in the ribs from Cassian. I batted his hand away, but refrained from the shove I wanted to give him, only because it was the first I'd seen of him since Adriata, and shadows still dimmed his eyes, and because of the precarious-feeling thing atop my head. The crown. Reese had crowned me at each and every meeting and function we'd had, long before I was his mate, long before I was his high lady, even under the mountain. I'd never questioned the tiaras and diadems and crowns that Nuala or Caradwyn wove into my hair, never objected to them, even before things between us had been this way. But this one... I peered up the stairs as Reese's strolling, unhurried footsteps thudded on the carpet. This crown was heavier. Not unwelcome, but strange. And as Reese appeared at the top of the stairs, resplendent in that black jacket, his wings out and gleaming as if he'd polished them, I was again in that room he'd brought me to late last night, after I'd awoken him with my thrashing and twisting in bed. It was contained a level above the library in the House of Wind, and warded with so many spells that it had taken him a few moments to work through them. Only he and I, and any future offspring, he added with a soft smile, were able to enter, unless we brought guests. The chamber was a cool, chill black, as if we'd stepped inside the mind of some sleeping beast, and within its round space gleamed glittering islands of light, of jewels, 10,000 years' worth of treasure. It was neatly organized, in podiums and open drawers and busts and racks.
The family jewels,
Reese said with a devious grin.
Some of the pieces we don't like are kept at the Court of Nightmares, just so they don't get pissy, and because we sometimes loan them to Moore's family, but these are for the family.
He led me past displays that sparkled like small constellations, the worth of each. Even as a merchant's daughter, I could not calculate the worth of any of it. And toward the back of the chamber, shrouded in a heavier darkness, I'd heard of catacombs on the continent, where skulls of beloved or infamous people were kept in little alcoves, dozens or hundreds of them to a wall. The concept here was the same. Carved into the rock was an entire wall of crowns. They each had their own resting place, lined with black velvet, each illuminated by glowworms, Reist told me, as the tiny bluish globs crusted in the arches of each nook seemed to glitter like the entire night sky. In fact, what I'd taken for small phalanites in the ceiling above, it was all glowworms. Pale blue and turquoise, their light as silken as moonlight, illuminating the jewels with their ancient, silent fire.
Pick one, Reese whispered in my ear.
A glowworm?
He nipped at my earlobe.
Smartass. He steered me back toward the wall of crowns, each wholly different, as individual as skulls.
Pick whichever crown you like.
I can't just take one.
You most certainly can. They belong to you.
I lifted a brow.
They don't.
Not really.
By law and tradition, this is all yours. Sell it, melt it, wear them. Do whatever you want.
You don't care about it? I gestured to the trove worth more than most kingdoms.
Oh, I have favorite pieces that I might convince you to spare, but this is yours. Every last piece of it.
Our eyes met, and I knew he, too, recalled the words that I'd whispered to him months ago, that every piece of my still-healing heart belonged to him. I smiled and brushed a hand down his arm before approaching the wall of crowns. I'd been terrified once, in Tamlin's court, of being given a crown, had dreaded it, and I supposed that I indeed had never fretted over it when it came to Reese, as if some small part of me had always known that this was where I was meant to be, at his side, as his equal, his queen. Reese inclined his head as if to say, yes. He saw and understood, and had always known. Now, striding down the townhouse stairs, Reese's attention went right to that crown atop my head, and the emotion that rippled across his face was enough to make even Moore and Cassian look away. I'd let the crown call to me. I hadn't picked it for style or comfort, but for the draw I felt to it, as if it were that ring in the weaver's cottage. My crown was crafted of silver and diamond, all fashioned into swirls of stars and various phases of the moon. Its arching apex held aloft a crescent moon of solid diamond, flanked by two exploding stars, and with a glittering dress from Starfall. Reese stepped off the stairs and took my hand. Night triumphant, and the stars eternal. If he was the sweet, terrifying darkness, I was the glittering light that only his shadows could make clear.
I thought you were leaving,
Nesta's voice cut in from atop the stairs. I braced myself, dragging my attention away from Reese. Nesta was in a gown of darkest blue, no jewelry to be seen, her hair swept up and unadorned as well. I supposed that with her stunning beauty, she needed no ornamentation. It would have been like putting jewelry on a lion. But for her to be dressed like that. She strode down the stairs, and when the others were silent, I realized. I tried not to look too obvious as I glanced at Cassian.
They hadn't seen each other since Adriata.
But the warrior only gave her a cursory once-over and turned toward Azriel to say something. Moore was watching both carefully, the warning she'd given my sister ringing silently between them. And Nesta, mother damn it all, seemed to remember. Seemed to rein in whatever words she'd been about to spit, and just approached me. And nearly made my heart stop dead with shock as she said, "You look beautiful." I blinked at her. Moore said, "That, Cassian, was what you were attempting to say." He grumbled something we chose not to hear. I said to Nesta, "Thank you. You do as well." Nesta only shrugged. I pushed, "Why are you dressed so nicely? Shouldn't you be practicing with Amryn?" I felt Cassian's attention slide to us. Felt them all look, as Nesta said, "I'm going with you." Chapter 42. No one said anything. Nesta only lifted her chin. I'd never seen her stumble for words. "I do not want to be remembered as a coward." "No one would say that," I offered quietly. "I would." Nesta surveyed us all, her gaze jumping past Cassian. Not to slight him, but avoid answering the look he was giving her. Approval, more. "It was some distant thing," she said. "War. Battle. It's not anymore. I will help if I can. If it means telling them what happened." "You've given enough," I said, my dress rustling as I braved a solitary step toward her. "Amryn claimed you were close to mastering whatever skill you need. You should stay, focus on that."
"No."
The word was steady, clear.
"A day or two delay with my training won't make any difference. Perhaps by the time we return, Amryn will have decoded that spell in the book."
She shrugged with a shoulder.
"You went off to battle for a court you barely know, who barely see you as friends. Amryn showed me the blood ruby, and when I asked you why, you said because it was the right thing. People needed your help."
Her throat bobbed.
"No one is going to fight to save the humans beneath the wall. No one cares, but I do."
She toyed with a fold in her dress.
"I do."
Rhys stepped up to my side.
"As High Lady, Feyre is no longer my emissary to the human world."
He gave Nesta a tentative smile.
"Want the job?"
Nesta's face yielded nothing, but I could have sworn some spark flared.
"Consider this meeting a trial basis, and I'll make you pay through the teeth for my services."
Rhys sketched a bow.
"I would expect nothing less of an Archeron, sister."
I poked him in the ribs, and he huffed a laugh.
"Welcome to the court," he said to her. "You're about to have one hell of a first day."
And to my eternal shock, a smile tugged at Nesta's mouth.
"No going back now,"
Cassian said to Rhys, gesturing to his wings. Rhys slid his hands into his pockets.
"I figure it's time for the world to know who really has the largest wingspan."
Cassian laughed, and even Azriel smiled. Moore gave me a look that had me biting my lip to keep from howling.
20 gold, Mark, says there's a fight in the first hour,"
Cassian said, still not really looking at Nesta.
30, and I say, within 45 minutes,"
Moore said, crossing her arms.
"You do remember there are vows and wards of neutrality,"
Rhys said mildly.
"You lot don't need fists or magic to fight,"
Moore chirped. Azriel said from the door,
50, and I say within 30 minutes, started by autumn.
Reese rolled his eyes.
Try not to look like you're all gambling on them, and no cheating by provoking fights.
Their answering grins were anything but reassuring. Reese sighed.
100 marks on a fight within 15 minutes.
Nesta let out a soft snort, but they all looked to me, waiting. I shrugged.
Reese and I are a team. He can gamble away our money on this bullshit.
They all looked deeply offended.
Reese looped his elbow through mine.
A queen in appearance.
Don't even finish that, I said.
He laughed.
Shall we?
He'd winnow me in. Moore would now take Cassian and Nesta, and Asriel would carry himself.
Reese glanced toward the sitting room clock and gave the shadow singer a nod.
Asriel instantly vanished. First to arrive, first to see if any trap awaited. In silence we waited. 1 minute, 2. Then Reese blew out a breath and said,
"Clear."
He threaded his fingers through mine, gripping tightly. Moore sagged a bit, jewelry glinting with the movement, and went to take Cassian's arm. But he'd at last approached Nesta, and as the world began to turn to shadows and wind, I saw Cassian tower over my sister, saw her chin lift defiantly, and heard him growl,
"Hello, Nesta."
Reese seemed to halt his winnowing as my sister said, "So you're alive." Cassian bared his teeth in a feral grin, wings flaring slightly.
"Were you hoping otherwise?"
Moore was watching, watching so closely, every muscle tense. She again reached for his arm, but Cassian angled out of reach, not tearing his eyes from Nesta's blazing gaze. Nesta blurted,
"You didn't come to..."
She stopped herself. The world seemed to go utterly still at that interrupted sentence. Nothing and no one more so than Cassian. He scanned her face as if furiously reading some battle report.
Moore just watched, as Cassian took Nesta's slim hand in his own, interlacing their fingers.
As he folded in his wings and blindly reached his other hand back toward Moore in a silent order to transport them. Cassian's eyes did not leave Nesta's, nor did hers leave his. There was no warmth, no tenderness on either of their faces. Only that raging intensity, that blend of contempt and understanding and fire. Reese began to winnow us again, and just as the dark wind swept in, I heard Cassian say to Nesta, his voice low and rough,
"The next time, emissary, I'll come say hello."
I'd learned enough from Reese about what to expect of the Dawn Court, but even the vistas he'd painted for me didn't do the sight justice. It was the clouds I saw first. Enormous clouds, drifting in the cobalt sky, soft and magnanimous, still tinged by the rose remnants of sunrise, their rounded edges gilded with the golden light. The dewy freshness of morning lingered in the balmy air as we peered up at the mountain palace spiraling into the heavens above. If the palace above the Court of Nightmares had been crafted of moonstone, this was made from sunstone. I didn't have a word for the near opalescent golden stone that seemed to hold the gleaming of 1,000 sunrises within it. Steps and balconies and archways and verandas and bridges linked the towers and gilded domes of the palace. Periwinkle morning glories climbing the pillars and neatly cut blocks of stone to drink in the gilded mists wafting by. Wafting by, because the mountain on which the palace stood. There was a reason I beheld the clouds first. The veranda that we'd appeared on was empty, save for Asriel and a slim-hipped attendant in the gold and ruby livery of dawn. Light, loose robes, layered and yet flattering. The male bowed, his brown skin smooth with youth and beauty.
This way, High Lord.
Even his voice was as lovely as the first glimmer of gold on the horizon. Rhys returned his bow with a shallow nod and offered his arm to me. Moore muttered behind us, falling into rank with Nesta at her side.
If you ever feel like building a new house, Rhys, let's use this one for inspiration.
Rhys threw her an incredulous look over a shoulder. Cassian and Asriel snorted softly. I glanced to Nesta as the attendants led us not to the archway beyond the veranda, but the spiral stairs climbing upward, along the bare face of a tower. Nesta seemed as out of place as all of us, save Moore, but that was awe on my sister's face. Utter awe at the castle in the clouds, at the verdant countryside rippling away far below, speckled with red-roofed little villages and broad, sparkling rivers. A lush, eternal countryside, rich with the weight of summer upon it. And I wondered if my face had appeared like that, the day I'd first seen Valaris. The mix of awe and anger, and the realization that the world was large and beautiful, and sometimes so overwhelming in its wonder that it was impossible to drink it down all at once. There were other palaces within Dawn's territory, set in small cities that specialized in tinkering and clockwork and clever things. Here, beyond those little villages nestled in the country hills, there was no industry. Nothing beyond the palace and the sky and the clouds. We ascended the spiral stairs, the drop-off, the two near edge, falling away into warm-colored rock, peppered with clusters of pale roses and fluffy magenta peonies. A beautiful, colorful death. Every step had me bracing myself as we wound up and up the tower, Rhys's grip on my hand unwavering. The wings remained out. He did not falter a single step. His eyes slid to mine, amused and questioning. He said down the bond, "And do you think I need to redecorate our home?" We passed open-air chambers full of fat silk pillows and plush carpets, past windows whose panes were arranged in colorful medleys, past urns overflowing with lavender, and fountains gurgling clearest water under the mild rays of the sun. "It's not a competition," I trilled to him. His hand tightened on mine. "Well, even if Theisen has a prettier palace, I'm the only one blessed with a high lady at my side." I couldn't help my blush, especially as Rhys added, "Tonight, I want you to wear that crown to bed. Only the crown."
"Scoundrel."
"Always."
I smiled, and he leaned in smoothly to brush a kiss to my cheek. Moore muttered a plea for mercy from mates. Muted voices reached us from the open-air chamber atop the sunstone tower. Some deep, some sharp, some lilting. Before we finished the last rotation around it, the arched, glassless windows offering no barrier to the conversation within.
"Three others are here already," Rhys warned me,
and I had the feeling that was what Asriel was now murmuring to Moore and Cassian. "Helion, Callias, and Theisen. The High Lords of Day, Winter, and our host, Dawn. Meaning Autumn and Summer, Baron and Tarquin, had not arrived yet. Or Spring." I still doubted Tamlin would come at all. But Baron and Tarquin. Perhaps the battle had changed Tarquin's mind, and Baron was awful enough to perhaps have sided with Highburn already, regardless of Aerys's manipulating. I caught the bob of Rhys's throat as we cleared the final steps to the open doorway. A long bridge connected the other half of the tower to the palace interior, its rails drooping with dawn-pale wisteria. I wondered if the others had been led up these stairs, or if it was somehow meant to be an insult.
"Shields up?"
Rhys asked. But I knew he was aware mine had been raised since Valaris. Just as I was aware that he'd put a shield, mental and physical, around all of us.
terms of peace or no. And though his face was calm, his shoulders thrown back, I said, I see all of you, Rhys, and there is not one part that I do not love with everything that I am. His hand squeezed mine in answer before he laid my fingers on his arm, raising it enough that we must have painted a rather courtly portrait as we entered the chamber. You bow to no one, was all he replied. Chapter 43. The chamber was, and was not, what I expected. Deep cushioned oak chairs had been arranged in a massive circle in the heart of the room, enough for all the High Lords and their delegates. Some, I realized, had been shaped to accommodate wings. It seemed it was not unusual, for clustered around a beautiful, slender male who I immediately remembered from under the mountain were winged fae. If the Illyrians had bat-like wings, these, they were like birds. The Peregrines are distantly related to Dracon's Seraphim people, and provide Theseon with a small aerial legion, Rhys said to me of the muscular, golden-armored males and females gathered. The male on his left is his captain and lover. Indeed, the handsome male stood just a tad closer to his High Lord, one hand on the fine sword at his side. No mating bond yet, Rhys went on. But I think Theseon didn't dare acknowledge it while Amarantha reigned. She delighted in ripping out their feathers, one by one. She made a dress out of them once. I tried not to wince as we stepped onto the polished marble floor. The stone warmed with the sun streaming through the open archways. The others had looked toward us, some murmuring at the sight of Rhys's wings, but my attention went to the true gem of the chamber, the reflection pool. Rather than a table occupying the space between that circle of chairs, a shallow circular reflection pool was carved into the floor itself. Its dark water was laden with pink and gold water lilies, the pads broad and flat as a male's hand, and beneath them, pumpkin and ivory fish lazily swam about. This, I admitted to Rhys, I might need to have. A wry pulse of humor down the bond. I'll make a note of it for your birthday. More wisteria twined about the pillars flanking the space, and along the tables set against the few walls, bunches of wine-colored peonies unfurled their silken layers. Between the vases, platters and baskets of food had been laid. Small pastries, cured meats, and garlands of fruit beckoned before sweating pewter ewers of some refreshment. Then there were the three High Lords themselves. We were not the only ones to have dressed well. Rhys and I halted halfway through the space. I knew them all, remembered them from those months under the mountain. Rhys had taught me their histories while we'd trained. I wondered if they sensed their power within me, as their attention slid between us. Theseon glided forward, his embroidered, exquisite shoes silent on the floor. His tunic was tight-fitting through his slender chest, but flowing pants, much like those Amran favored, whispered with movement as he approached. His brown skin and hair were kissed with gold, as if the sunrise had permanently gilded them. But his upswept eyes, the rich brown of freshly tilled fields, were his loveliest feature. He paused a few feet away, taking in Rhys and me, our entourage, the wings that Rhys kept folded behind him. Welcome, Theseon said, his voice as deep and rich as those eyes. His lover monitored our every breath from a few feet behind, no doubt realizing our own companions were doing the same behind us. Or, Theseon mused, since you've called this meeting, perhaps you should be doing the welcoming? A faint smile ghosted Rhys's perfect face, shadows twining between the strands of his hair. He'd loosened the damper on his power, just a bit. They all had. I may have requested the meeting, Theseon, but you were the one gracious enough to offer up your beautiful residence.
Thiessen gave a nod of thanks, perhaps deeming it impolite to inquire about Rhysand's newly revealed wings, then turned to me. We stared at each other while my companions bowed behind me, as a High Lord's wife should have done with them. Yet I simply stood and stared. Rhys did not interfere, not at this first test. Dawn, the gift of healing. It was his gift that had allowed me to save Rhysand's life, that had sent me to the Suriel that day I had learned the truth that would alter my eternity. I offered Thiessen a restrained smile. Your home is lovely. But Thiessen's attention had gone to the tattoo. I knew he realized it the moment he noticed the ink covered the wrong hand. Then, the crown atop my head. His brows flicked up. Rhys only shrugged. The other two High Lords had approached now.
Kalias, Rhys said to the white-haired one, whose skin was so pale it looked frozen.
Even his crushing blue eyes seemed like chips hewn from a glacier as he studied Rhys's wings and seemed to instantly dismiss them. He wore a jacket of royal blue, embroidered with silver thread, its collar and sleeves dusted with white rabbit fur. I would have thought it too warm for the mild day, especially the fur-lined knee-high brown boots, but given the utter iciness of his expression, perhaps his blood ran frozen. A trio of similarly colored High Fae remained in their seats, one of them a stunning young female who looked right at Moore, and grinned. Moore returned the beam, hopping from one foot to another as Kalias opened his mouth. And then, my friend squealed. Squealed! Both females hurtled for each other, and Moore's squeal had turned to a quiet sob as she flung her arms around the slender stranger and hugged her tight. The female's own arms were shaking as she gripped Moore. Then they were laughing and crying and dancing around each other, pausing to study each other's faces, to wipe away tears, and then embracing again. "You look the same," the stranger was saying, beaming from ear to ear. "I think that's the same dress I saw you in. You look the same, wearing fur in the middle of summer. How utterly typical. You brought the usual suspects, it seems. Thankfully, the company has been improved by some new arrivals." Moore waved me over. It had been ages since I'd seen her shining so brightly.
"Vivian, meet Feyre. Feyre, meet Vivian, Kalias's wife."
I glanced at Thiessen and Kalias, the latter of whom watched his wife and Moore with raised brows.
"I tried to suggest she stay at home," Kalias said dryly. "But she threatened to freeze my balls off."
Rhys let out a dark chuckle.
"Sounds familiar."
I threw him a glare over a sparkling shoulder, just in time to see the smirk fade from Kalias's face as he truly took in Rhys. Not just the wings this time. My mate's own amusement dimmed, some thread of tension going taut between him and Kalias. But I'd reached Moore and Vivian, and wiped the curiosity from my face as I shook the female's hand, surprised to find it warm. Her silver hair glittered in the sun like fresh snow.
"Wife," Vivian said, clicking her tongue. "You know, it still sounds strange to me. Every time someone says it, I keep looking over my shoulder as if it'll be someone else."
Kalias said to none of us in particular, from where he remained facing Rhys, stiff-backed,
"I have yet to decide if I find it insulting, since she says it every day."
Vivian stuck out her tongue at him, but Moore gripped her shoulder and squeezed.
"It's about time."
A blush stained Vivian's pale face.
"Yes, well, everything was different under the mountain."
Her sapphire eyes slid to mine, and she bowed her head.
"Thank you for returning my mate to me."
"Mates?"
Moore fizzed, glancing between them.
"Married and mates?"
You two do realize that this is a serious meeting,
Rhys said,
and that the fish in the pool are very sensitive to high-pitched sounds,
Callias added. Vivian gave both a vulgar gesture that made me instantly like her. Rhys looked to Callias with what I assumed was some sort of long-suffering male expression, but the High Lord did not return it. He only stared at Rhys, amusement again gone, that coldness settling in across his face. There had been tension with the Winter Court, Moore had explained when they'd rescued Lucian and me on the ice, a lingering anger over something that had occurred under the mountain. But the third High Lord had at last approached from across the pool. My father had once bought and traded a gold and lapis lazuli pendant that hailed from the ruins of an arid southeastern kingdom, where the Fae had ruled as gods amid swaying date palms and sand-swept palaces. I'd been mesmerized by the colors, the artistry, but more interested in the shipment of myrrh and figs that had come with it. A few of the latter my father had snuck to me while I loitered in his office. Even now, I could still taste their sweetness on my tongue, still smell that earthy scent, and I couldn't quite explain why, but I remembered that ancient necklace and those exquisite delicacies as he prowled toward us. His clothes had been formed from a single bolt of white fabric. Not a robe, not a dress, but rather something in between, pleated and draped over his muscular body. A golden cuff of an upright serpent encircled one powerful bicep, offsetting his near glowing dark skin, and a radiant crown of golden spikes. The rays of the sun, I realized, glistened atop his onyx hair. The sun personified. Powerful, lazy with grace, capable of kindness and wrath. Nearly as beautiful as Rhysand. And somehow, colder than Callias. His high fey entourage was almost as large as ours, clad in similar robes of varying rich dyes, cobalt and crimson and amethyst, some with expertly coal-lined eyes, all of them fit and gleaming with health. But perhaps the physical power of them, of him, was the sleight of hand. For Helion's other title was Spell Cleaver, and his 1,000 libraries were rumored to contain the knowledge of the world. Perhaps all that knowledge had made him too aware, too cold behind those bright eyes. Or perhaps that had come after Amarantha had looted some of those libraries for herself. I wondered if he'd reclaimed what she'd taken, or if he mourned what she'd burned. Even Moore and Vivian halted their reunion as Helion stopped a wise distance away. It was his power that had gotten my friends out of Highburn. His power that made me glow whenever Rhys and I were tangled in each other and every heartbeat ached with mirth. Helion jerked his square chin to Rhys, the only one of them, it seemed, not surprised by my mate's wings. But his eyes, a striking amber, fell on me.
Does Tamlin know what she is?
His voice was indeed colder than Callias's, and the question, so carefully worded. Rhys drawled,
If you mean beautiful and clever, then yes, I think he does.
Helion leveled a flat look at him.
Does he know she is your mate and High Lady?
High Lady? Vivian squeaked, but Moore shushed her, drawing her away to whisper. Theson and Callias took me in, slowly. Cassian and Azrael casually slid closer, no more than a night breeze.
If he arrives,
Rhys said smoothly,
I suppose we'll find out.
Helion let out a dark laugh.
Dangerous. He was utterly lethal, this High Lord kissed by the sun.
I always liked you, Rhysand.
Theson stepped forward, ever the good host,
for that laugh indeed promised violence. His lover and the other peregrines seemed to shift into defensive positions, either to guard their high lord or simply to remind us that we were guests in their home. But Helion's attention snagged on Nesta, lingered. She only stared right back at him, unruffled, unimpressed.
"Who is your guest?"
the High Lord of Day asked a bit too quietly for my liking. Cassian revealed nothing, not even a glimmer that he knew Nesta. But he didn't move an inch from his casual defensive position. Neither did Asriel. "She is my sister, and our emissary to the human lands," I said at last to him, stepping to her side. "And she will tell her story when the others are here."
"She is Fae."
"No shit," Vivian muttered under her breath, and Moore's snort was cut off as Calais raised his brows at them. Helion ignored them.
"Who made her?"
Theisen asked politely, angling his head. Nesta surveyed Theisen, then Helion, then Calais. "Hybern did," she said simply. Not a flicker of fear in her eyes, in her upraised chin. Stunned silence. But I'd had enough of my sister being ogled. I linked elbows with her, heading toward the low-backed chairs that I assumed were for us. "They threw her in the cauldron," I said, "along with my other sister, Elaine." I sat, placing Nesta beside me, and gazed at the three assembled High Lords without an inch of manners or niceness or flattery. After the High Priestess Ianthe and Tamlin sold out Prithian and my family to them. Nesta nodded her silent confirmation. Helion's eyes blazed like a forge.
"That is a heavy accusation to make, especially of your former lover."
"It is no accusation," I said, folding my hands in my lap. "We were all there. And now we're going to do something about it." Pride flickered down the bond. And then, Vivian muttered to Calais, jabbing him in the ribs, "Why can't I be High Lady as well?" The others arrived late. We took our seats around the reflection pool, Theisen's impeccably mannered attendants bringing us plates of food and goblets of exotic juices from the tables against the wall. Conversation halted and flowed, Moore and Vivian sitting next to each other to catch up on what seemed like 50 years' worth of gossip. Vivian had not been under the mountain. As her childhood friend, Calais had been protective of her to a fault over the years, had placed the sharp-minded female on border duty for decades to avoid the scheming of his court. He didn't let her near Amarantha, either. Didn't let anyone get a whiff of what he felt for his white-haired friend, who had no clue, not one, that he had loved her his entire life. And in those last moments, when his power had been ripped from him by that spell, Calais had flung out the remnants to warn her, to tell Vivian he loved her, and then he begged her to protect their people. So she had. As Moore and my friends had protected Valaris, Vivian had veiled and guarded the small city under her watch, offering safe harbor to those who made it. Never forgetting the High Lord and friend trapped under the mountain, never ceasing her hunt for finding a way to free him. Especially while Amarantha unleashed her horrors upon his court to break them, punish them. Yet Vivian held them together. And through that reign of terror, during all those years, she realized what Calais was to her, what she felt for him in return. The day he'd returned home, he'd winnowed right to her. She'd kissed him before he could speak a word. He'd then knelt down and asked her to be his wife. They went an hour later to a temple and swore their vows. And that night, during the, you know, Vivian grinned at Moore, the mating bond had at last snapped into place. The story occupied our time while we waited, since Moore wanted details, lots of them,
ones that pushed the boundaries of propriety and left Theisen choking on his elderberry wine. But Kalia smiled at his wife and mate, warm and bright enough that despite his icy coloring, he should have been the High Lord of Day. Not the sharp-tongued, brutal Helion, who watched my sister and me like an eagle. A great golden eagle, with very sharp talons. I wondered what his beast form was, if he grew wings like Rhysand, and claws. If Theisen did too, white wings, like the watchful peregrines who kept silent, his own fierce-eyed lover not uttering a word to anyone. Perhaps the High Lords of the Solar Courts all possessed wings beneath their skin, a gift from the skies that their courts claimed ownership of. It was an hour before Theisen announced, "Tarquin is here." My mouth went dry. An uncomfortable silence spread. "Heard about the blood rubies?" Helion smirked at Rhys, toying with the golden cuff on his bicep. "That is a story I want you to tell." Rhys waved an idle hand. "All in good time." "Prick," he said to me with a wink. But then Tarquin cleared the top step into the chamber, Varian and Cressida flanking him. Varian glanced among us for someone who was not there, and glowered when he beheld Cassian, seated to Nesta's left. Cassian just gave him a cocky grin.
"I wrecked one building," Cassian had said once of his last visit to the summer court, where he was now banned. Apparently, even assisting them in battle hadn't lifted it. Tarquin ignored Rhysand and me, ignored all of us, Rhys's wings included, as he made vague apologies for the tardiness, blaming it on the attack. Possibly true. Or he'd been deciding until the last minute whether to come, despite his acceptance of the invitation. He and Helion were nearly as tense, and only Theisen seemed to be on decent terms with him. Neutral indeed. Kalias had become even colder, distant. But the introductions were done, and then an attendant whispered to Theisen that Baron and all of his sons had arrived. The smile instantly vanished from Moore's mouth, her eyes, from my own as well. The violence simmering off my friends was enough to boil the pool at our toes as the High Lord of Autumn filed through the archway, his sons in rank behind him, his wife, Lucian's mother, at his side. Her russet eyes scanned the room, as if looking for that missing son. They settled instead on Helion, who gave her a mocking incline of his dark head. She quickly averted her gaze. She had saved my life once, under the mountain, in exchange for my sparing Lucian's. Did she wonder where her lost son was now? Had she heard the rumors I'd crafted? The lies I'd spun? I couldn't tell her that Lucian currently hunted the continent, dodging armies for an enchanted queen, to find a scrap of salvation. Baron, slender-faced and brown-haired, didn't bother to look anywhere but at the High Lords assembled. But his remaining sons sneered at us. Sneered enough that the peregrines ruffled their feathers. Even Varian flashed his teeth in warning at the leer Cressida earned from one of them. Their father didn't bother to check them, but Aerys did. A step behind his father, Aerys murmured, "Enough." And his younger brothers fell into line, all three of them. Whether Baron noticed or cared, he did not let on. No, he merely stopped halfway across the room, hands folded before him, and scowled, as if we were a pack of mongrels. Baron, the oldest among us, the most awful. Rhys smoothly greeted him, though his power was a dark mountain shuddering beneath us. "It's no surprise that you're tardy, given that your own sons were too slow to catch my mate. I suppose it runs in the family." Baron's lips curled slightly as he looked to me, my crown. "Mate and High Lady."
I leveled a flat, bored stare at him. Turned it on his hateful sons. On Eris. Eris only smiled at me, amused and aloof. Would he wear that mask when he ended his father's life and stole his throne? Cassian was watching the would-be High Lord like a hawk studying his next meal. Eris deigned a glance at the Illyrian general and inclined his head in invitation, subtly patting his stomach. Ready for round two. Then Eris's attention shifted to Mor, sweeping over her with a disdain that made me see red. Mor only stared blankly at him. Bored. Even Vivian was biting her lip. So she knew of what had been done to Mor, when Eris's presence would trigger. Unaware of the meeting that had already occurred, the unholy alliance struck. Asriel was so still, I wasn't sure he was breathing. Whether Mor noticed, whether she knew that though she'd tried to move past the bargain we'd made, the guilt of it still haunted Asriel, she didn't let on. They sat, filling in the final seats. Not one empty chair left. It said enough about Tamlin's plans. I tried not to sag in my chair as the attendants took care of the autumn court, as we all settled. Thiessen, as host, began.
Rhysand, you've called this meeting, pushed us to gather sooner than we intended. Now would be the time to explain what is so urgent.
Rhys blinked, slowly.
Surely the invading armies landing on our shores explain enough. So you have called us to do what, exactly?
Helion challenged, bracing his forearms on his muscled, gleaming thighs.
Raise a unified army? Among other things,
Rhys said mildly. It was almost the same, the entrance. Almost the same as that night in my family's old cottage, when the door had shattered and a beast had charged in with the freezing cold and roared at us. He didn't bother with the landing balcony, or the escorts. He didn't have an entourage. Like a crack of lightning, vicious as a spring storm, he winnowed into the chamber itself. And my blood went colder than Callias's ice, as Tamlin appeared and smiled like a wolf. Chapter 44. Absolute silence. Absolute stillness. I felt the tremor of magic slide through the room as shield after shield locked into place around each High Lord and his retinue. The one Rhysand had already snapped around us, now reinforcing. Rage laced its essence. Wrath and rage. Even if my mate's face was bored, lazy. I tried to school mine into the cold caution with which Nesta regarded him, or the vague distaste on Mor's. I tried, and failed utterly. I knew his moods, his temper. Here was the High Lord who had shredded those Naga into bloody ribbons. Here was the High Lord who had impaled Amarantha on Lucian's sword and ripped out her throat with his teeth. All of it, gleaming in those green eyes as they fixed on me, on Rhys. Tamlin's teeth were white as crow-picked bones as he smiled broadly. Thiessen rose, his captain remaining seated behind him, albeit with a hand on his sword.
We were not expecting you, Tamlin.
Thiessen gestured with a slender hand toward his cringing attendants.
Fetch the High Lord a chair.
Tamlin did not tear his gaze from me, from us. His smile turned subdued, yet somehow more unnerving, more vicious. He wore his usual green tunic. No crown, no adornments, no sign of another bandolier to replace the one I'd stolen. Baron drawled,
I will admit, Tamlin, that I am surprised to see you here.
Tamlin didn't alter his focus from me, from every breath I took.
Rumor claims your allegiance now lies elsewhere,